night tonight. Very big night. Great company. They played the Canadian version of the Super Bowl. It was the 100th Grey Cup in Toronto, the home standing Toronto Argonauts against the Calgary Stampeders. The late, great Roger Doucette, first quarter, Toronto's rookie Raider, Chad Owens, MVP of the CFL from Hawaii, five-yard touchdown, aloha. Second quarter, Kevin Gunn, picked up by Pacino Horn. He's going to godfather 25 yards for a 14-3 Argo lead. The crowd going nuts. Halftime, they had it all. 74-year-old Troubadour Gordon Lightfoot to fellow Canadian Justin Bieber, 18-year-old heartthrob. Half a century difference. The Mounties bring the cup out. Celebration at Toronto. They beat Calgary 35-22 in the 100th Grey Cup, or the Coupe Grey. The Argonauts are unlikely chance. They were 9-9 in the regular season. But if you're looking for a bottle of Molson's or a bottle of Labatt's in Toronto, better hurry up. They're going to be gone soon.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Travis Lule.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him.
Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's after it.
Articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning, TSN 1050.
CO2.
Chad Owens, favorite player ever.
He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good, he's real good.
He's into MMA,
from the gridiron to the octagon.
He's got game.
This is his game.
He's the total package.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man,
team player, dedication to the max.
True blue through and through.
I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning.
1, 2, 3.
We're the Argo cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank live show. One, two, three.
We're the Argo cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank live show.
Yay! Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank! Go Frank! Go Frank! Go Frank! Isn't that neat? Isn't that neat? Cute girls calling out my name, telling me to go. Go Frank! I think they're trying to get rid of me, actually. All right, tonight's a big night. I'm really pleased and proud to say that we're gonna set aside my amateur style, and we're going to bring on some pros here. We're going to bring on some guys from who've worked with Rouge Radio, with TSN, who work with TSN. In fact, my new friend, my new best buddy, Matthew Scaniti, and Kevin Garbullo will be on for the second half of the show, which will be the second hour. That will be when we talk college and, amateur football. Remember, this is all about football. You heard me. Football. Not that European football. That's soccer. This is football. Now, I played a couple of new ads from TSN. I think I'll call him right now. Hang on. I got to call Matthew. He's probably sitting there waiting. He probably forgot about me. The bugger forgot about me. Here I am, a big star, and here he keeps me waiting. Here, hang on. You guys love when I do this. I should play some music about this. Do, 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 do. Do 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 do. What do you mean stop? Who the heck are you? You don't even like sports.
Hello, Matt speaking.
Matt, it's Frank. How you doing, buddy?
Not too bad, Frank. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thrilled to have you on the show, first of all. I want to thank you for taking the time. Hey, my pleasure, my man. All right, so from time to time, when you have time, I'm really looking forward to talking to you. It's always nice to have somebody who spends a lot of time following the CFL. Let's first do an introduction of you. You used to write at The Post, and now you're at TSN. Fill out the blanks for us. You're a young man with a future, and I'm sure – how long have you been on the show?
On SportsCenter.
No, here, on this show. How long have you been on this show?
Oh, I did my first little bit with Rouge Radio back, 2000, and just before the Western Final in 2011. So, this would be the third season I'd be doing Rouge Radio.
Good for you, buddy. And how long have you been on my show here, this one, on Candid Frank Live?
Oh, I think this is the first time.
Yeah, and it's been a couple of minutes, right?
Yeah.
And you've already outgrown this show.
Oh, there you go, you know.
Yeah, hey, listen, buddy, you got to have a sense of humor with me because...
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, bud. All right, here it is. I played a bunch of ads. You didn't hear. I played all this stuff, the new TSN Travis Lule ad, the TSN Owens ad. I even had a little promo from the cheerleaders doing the Go Frank thing. And it is going to be an exciting year, isn't it?
No, absolutely. I mean, listen... When you get into the CFL season, what you find, at least I do from a lot of people, is this kind of tacit, maybe dismissal of the league. Again, when you constantly compare it to the NFL in a very, very narrow scope, I think that's kind of unfair. People just have to understand the CFL is its own little beast, and it's unique in so many different ways, and that's what makes it so endearing. And when you're getting to training camp and especially when you're getting to candidate at Iverwind is no longer because it's now just a big pile of, you know, wrought iron, and they're clearing it out of the way for what will be a sparkly new stadium. But the candidate at Iverwind, I remember last year was something special, because when you're getting into the first phase of the CFL season around candidate, it's pretty exciting. And then when you get into the nitty gritty of it after Labor Day, that's when it really takes on a different form. So it's a different game, it's a different identity, and that's what I think makes the CFL so unique and so special. And if you can appreciate it for what it is, it really gives the summer an extra little bit of excitement around here.
It sure does. And you know, the most important thing that one can say about the CFL is, but using your term, its own beast. I don't see why people have to compare. Do people compare high school football, college football, the NFL to each other? They don't.
No, I mean,
they're each their own thing, right?
Exactly. And the argument that it's really a non-starter for me when the point is always made that, well, these players couldn't make it in the NFL, or even, which I find more annoying, the Arena Football League, and then they use the CFL as their last resort. Listen, there have been NFL players, ex-NFL players, who have tried to come up here. Dominic Rhodes, who won a Super Bowl with the Indianapolis Colts back in 2007, is the latest example of an NFL player who's coming up here trying to adapt to the Canadian game, and it's not easy. You know, we've had more successful players, most notable of all, Warren Moon, cut their teeth in the CFL. Jeff Garcia is another quarterback who did that. Philip Hunt is a defensive end with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who's now successful with the Philadelphia Eagles, who actually develop up here and go down to the NFL. So it's a totally different league. It requires a different skill set. It requires a different player. Just because you play in the NFL doesn't automatically make you or would make you a CFL superstar. So it's, again, if you look at it within its own terms and within its, you know, three down concept, it is a very unique and amazing game with really its own little nuances.
Absolutely. The Argos had Michael Williams in camp, first round draft choice, played Seattle, and he was, gosh, and I know you probably noticed just like I did, it seemed like he was only there for 2 days. And he was gone. He was jettisoned within 2 days.
I think you got that right. I mean, I remember standing beside another member of the media and watching him struggle to get off of the line. And even after the first day of rookie camp, kind of hobbling back to the line a bit, he has had leg injuries throughout his career and even had to, I'm sure many of your listeners will remember, had to take 2 years off of football before he had that impressive year with the Seahawks about 2 or 3 years ago now. You know, and I remember asking him, if he knew about the waggle, which of course is the movement off the line, which a wide receiver can do in the CFL, and he kind of was like, yeah, I'm still learning it, and he didn't understand. Of course, it's always the cliche that there's 12 players up here. So, listen again, you know, that's a great point. A guy who was great in college with USC, had a pretty good season when the Seahawks won the NFC West. And overall, though, he just frankly didn't have the overall, I wouldn't say willingness, but just, you know, he was just another example of a guy who comes up here and can't, not because of his size, not because of lack of ability, but just doesn't fit because he doesn't have maybe the adaptability, perhaps, is the best word to use. That some other guys, you know, Avon Coburn, who was a guy who didn't succeed in the NFL, came up and won 2 Grey Cups with the Montreal Alouettes as a running back. So it really depends on, again, that adaptability, whether they can understand the three down concept and the yard off the ball and all the little nuances. It's so far more complicated than people give it credit for.
Absolutely. Okay, let's begin with our tour of the CFL. Excuse me. Let's start in BC. G. Roy Simon's gone to Saskatchewan. Will Andrew Harris, you know, become an MOP candidate or not?
I think that's the most important question on the Lions offense. A lot of people look at Travis Lule being the MOP of an MOP winner himself a couple of years ago, and say that however he goes, BC's offense goes. Andrew Harris had a record-breaking season last year, most yards by a Canadian ever from scrimmage. And I really think, although some people might disagree with me, that his production last year, I think, really signaled to Wally Buono that G. Roy Simon, despite being the CFL's all-time leading receiver, was a bit expendable. So I think Harris coming in now, he apparently has, and this is a guy I've spoken to him on a few occasions, who is all about football, who even says, and a lot of people kind of roll their eyes, saying it, well, why can't I be a Canadian superstar who makes his living in the CFL? I mean, we always look at a CFL player as someone who, although can make okay money, has to find some subsistence at other points in the year, and this guy has completely embraced football. He is a product of the CJFL. And has become, at least out in BC, a really recognizable character. And I think, you know, although John Cornish has a fantastic year, Andrew Harris could have easily won the most outstanding Canadian. And he provides you so many, he gives your offense and offensive coordinator Jacques Chapdelaine so many different iterations with that offense, so many ways to really overwhelm defenses. And it's not just him. If he's not getting the ball, if it's not being handed off to him or thrown to him out of the flat or checked down to him, you've got Sean Gore, Nick Moore, a plethora of young receivers, Marco Iannuzzi. This BC Lions team can flow from Andrew Harris. And if he's not there, and if even if he is being a distraction, you know, it opens up so many other options for Travis Lule. So I think this is a great opportunity for Andrew Harris to, again, go above and beyond what he set last year. Remember, at the beginning of the season, those your listeners who are from BC will remember, this was a guy who at the beginning of the year, said, you know, why can't I be a 1,000-yard rusher and 1,000-yard receiver? And I'm not going to go ahead and say that he can this year, but because those are pretty lofty expectations. But we've seen how Chad Owens in Toronto can be a dual threat. You know, here's a guy, three straight years, 3,000 yards combined as a returner and receiver. I think Andrew Harris can be that dangerous as a rusher and receiver in BC.
Yeah, they have an embarrassment of riches in BC. And for those that, you know, recent memory football fans of the CFL, the Alouettes made the opposite decision that BC made. They kept some experienced veterans and let go a kid named Chad Owens who came to Toronto and became what you just described.
No, absolutely. And it was a situation, and Jim Popp kind of alluded to it last year when Chad Owens was really making his mark and really trailblazing a path to the MOP award. And Jim Popp said, listen, if it had all worked out, we would have kept him. But we just had, at that time, remember, you know, Mark Trestman had just arrived and they were building a team that would go on to get to the Grey Cup three straight years. And that was a big deal. And I think they just made a decision. You look at the Alouettes now, they don't have a returner. Yeah, sure, they have SJ Green and Jamel Richardson, but what would a Chad Owens, who has, a lot of people should be aware of this, has actually changed receiving positions in the last couple of years, moved from being a slot back out wide to a wide receiver, and that's really helped him out. So it's going to be interesting to see, just jumping to the Argos for a second, to see how, whether or not they give him that much work this year, because the Argos themselves have a plethora of talent in their receiving core. But at the end of the day, jumping back to Harris, there has been a tremendous amount of faith shown to him by Coach Chapdelaine and by Coach Benavides, because they know what his commitment level is, and that really has said to the entire offense, which, you know, you look at all those offensive pieces and including the quarterback, that is comparatively a very young offense, and one that is still developing. Had a great year last year, fell short in the West Final, but you just look at Andrew Harris and you have to think, I mean, TSN, we were all asked to put out our top 50 players. I have Andrew Harris as a second in second place in my top 50, just after Chad Owens, because I really think those combo backs, the receiver and the runner, that combination, that kind of dual threat from one player really, really makes a difference in a CFL offense.
Catch and run, that's what Jim Barker wants. Let's move on to Edmonton. Well, first, wait, with BC, they dodged a bullet this winter. They could have lost Chapdelaine, and a young offense like BC could have been hurt badly by that.
Yeah, no, they could have. There's always questions. Given, I mean, this is even something about Mike Benavides a couple of years ago when he was the defensive coordinator. BC has so many good Canadian coaches, and that's being linked to a CIS or another CFL team, I think, really is a constant thing out there. And it's, I think that Chapdelaine, just like Chris Jones out here in Toronto, will get his chance to be a head coach in the CFL or if not a CIS program. Chapdelaine, not Jones, obviously, he wants to be a head coach in the CFL, but both those guys are two examples of top assistants, top coordinators who really, those two guys particularly aren't just isolated in the particular sides of the ball that they focus on. They're multifaceted. They make decisions or they are really leaned upon to make decisions by the head coach and the assistant general manager. And Chapdelaine, really, you have to give him so much credit for the way that Travis Lule has developed. You know, everyone forgets Travis Lule had a pretty poor start to the year, just as all the Lions did back in 2011. And it was really kind of Chapdelaine's faith that really helped Lule develop. So you're absolutely right. The fact that they were able to keep him brings that continuity, and that's so important. And, you just look at the lines and you have to think, yet again, you know, this is a team maybe besides the Calgary Stampeders that sets themselves apart as one of the top teams in the West.
After the Grey Cup this past year, when the Argos won the 100th Grey Cup in, of course, in Toronto at the Rogers Centre, immediately after the game, Calgary was given the nod for being the favorite this year. Has anything changed over the offseason?
No. I'm still one of those people who looked at Drew Tate's injury in the West semifinal and was kind of shocked that his brain was located in his forearm when suddenly a head injury became a fractured forearm. You either believe that he played with a concussion or that he threw that deep bomb to Robbie Bryant with a broken arm. But I just look at Drew Tate and not just him, but Kevin Glenn, and look at every other position on that team, and I just see the depth. Remember, even though Scott Milanovic, I should say, won the Coach of the Year award, at the end of the day, John Huffnagel, he rotated in close to 70 players last year. He had to deal with so many injuries, and he really, not that I think he should have won, because Milanovic was a first-year head coach, and he did wonders with the Argos, but Huffnagel, it should have been really close, because Huffnagel did a hell of a job putting putting together what a patchwork team together. And you look now, everybody's relatively healthy. If Drew Tate goes down, you have Kevin Glenn, you have John Cornish, you know, it's on that offense. Maurice Price had a fantastic end to the year and really helped them out into the playoffs. And, you know, going into their defense, Keon Raymond in particular, it just seems to me that they have a team that I think can be more consistent than they were last year. They struggled a bit coming into Labor Day before they ran those two games against the Eskimos and had a pretty impressive run after that. Again, because Huffnagel had to juggle so many pieces. But at the end of the day, they just have the depth. They have, again, another year into the offense. And if Drew Tate does have a fantastic year, again, it's a cliche, but quarterbacks are everything in the CFL. And if he has a fantastic year and becomes the quarterback that they want him to be, you know, he really can set that Calgary offense apart. And the only team that can challenge him, I think, in the West is BC. So, and if Drew Tate's not there, Kevin Glenn is more than capable of taking that team over. So depth, experience, really, I don't think you can ask much more out of the Calgary Stampeders.
Yep, and I guess this is my dark horse, Saskatchewan. Can it happen 3 years in a row, the Grey Cup home team winning the Grey Cup?
Well, it's a funny thing that has happened over the last couple of seasons. Look back to 2011, as I had mentioned previously, the BC Lions had struggled in the beginning part of the year. They were 1-6 before they had that amazing turnaround all the way to the Grey Cup, and I think, I could be wrong on the record here, I think they were 11-1 going to the Grey Cup, and I was there for their only loss when they lost to Hamilton at Iverwin and were completely blown away, but then came back and at home to secure a spot in the West Final before they were going to, if they had won that, would host the Grey Cup when they destroyed Anthony Calvillo and the Montreal Alouettes, and it just seemed that they were a bit inspired. Last year was kind of funny with the Argos because they weren't very good at home. If anything, they were a much better road team. And then all of a sudden in the playoffs, when they did have a home game against the Edmonton Eskimos, which a lot of us in Toronto media thought could be a bit of a banana peel, they played exceptionally well. And then in the Grey Cup, they came out. I remember I picked Calgary, and I was reminded of that by everyone in the winning locker room after that. But I came out and watched the warm-ups and saw just the Argos completely, even in what was a very, very, very loud Rogers Center, one of the loudest nights I've ever heard it, in a packed arena, you know, what the Argos don't experience at all, ever, if it's not a Grey Cup. And even then, if it is a Grey Cup, there's always been questions about if Toronto does can embrace the big game. It did last year, and it just completely propelled the Argos. It just was one of those magical events. And when you think about Magic and the CFL, you have to think about Saskatchewan. I mean, that city lives and breathes and dies on Canadian football. And Brandon Tatum, the general manager of the Rough Riders, has done everything he can, everything possible, to put together a very veteran lineup. You look, they've acquired, you know, a couple, you think about it. John Chick has come back on defensive end. Across from him is Ricky Foley, who was the outstanding Canadian for the Argos in the Grey Cup last year. You look, they brought Dwight Anderson, who was a nemesis of Saskatchewan, particularly Western Dressler, for a while. He's a veteran DB who's now in their secondary. They bring in G. Roy Simon. Yeah, he's 37 years old, but he's still one of the best slot backs in this league. You look throughout the lineup, Darian Durant, even though new offensive coordinator George Cortez says he is still developing, is clearly one of the better mobile quarterbacks in this league. He's got Weston Dressler. Corey Sheets, despite the recent revelations about some of his legal issues, is a very, very experienced tailback coming from the NFL, going back to our previous point. All throughout this team, there is experience. They're built to win now. My only question is, if it doesn't work, what kind of options does Corey Chamberlain have behind Darian Durant, who, whether or not, you know, Rider fans like to admit it, has been very inconsistent at times. And there really isn't much depth behind him. Weston Dressler, who I believe is dealing with some nagging injuries, if he goes down with an injury, you know, you're going to be relying a lot on, again, a 37-year-old G. Roy Simon, who was injured last year. And if not him, then you're looking at receivers like Taj Smith. Is he ready to take the load? I mean, it's all about depth. We go from a team like the Stampeders that has the depth in every position to the Rough Riders, who may not have the depth, or as much depth, I should say, in every position. So to me, I think this team on paper, it looks good. Corey Chamberlain says, hey, you know, we look good on paper, and that bodes well. But when the bullets start flying, we have to perform. And if these pieces, A, don't perform, or B, get injured, that's when I start to get a little worried about the Rough Riders. And that fan base in Regina is going to, after seeing what both the Argos and the Lions did the last 2 years, is not going to expect an appearance in the Grey Cup. They're going to demand it.
Absolutely, they are. Okay, we're going to take a short break, about 3.5 minutes, folks. An interview with Matt Black. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the Eastern Division teams in the CFL. And here's Matt Black talking about being responsible, more responsible now that JY's gone.
Receiver Quincy Hurst.
So, last time we talked, it was the first day at camp. And here we are now, third day of camp. And how do you feel?
I feel good. I got my legs under me. Haven't been too gassed after these the first few days. And it's just really starting to come. The offense is getting around my head.
Yeah, I notice the field here. How do you define this field? How does it compare with the Rogers Center?
I mean, it's pretty similar. There's, you know, the grass turf. This one's obviously a lot hotter because the sun's beating on it all day. So it's kind of tough on the feet. But, you know, it's good. Easy on the joints.
Now, the conditioning that you have, do you feel you're ready to go? I know you're feeling physically well.
Coach Milanovic does a real good job with these training camp practices of getting us in shape. You know, we're never walking around. We're always sprinting from drill to drill. And if you don't have anything to do, you got to find work inside.
Okay, where are you at in your training regimen? Where do you see your improvement in your play in the rest of the training camp?
Physically, I feel all right. I just got to keep my legs under me, keep taking care of myself. And it's mostly all mental, because I'm doing a lot less thinking out there and just playing football now compared to last year.
Best of luck. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Good.
I'm with Matt Black. Everybody's talking about Jordan Younger going and a guy named Matt Black taking over. are you ready to handle it?
Yeah, you know, I'm excited about the opportunity that I have in front of me. You know, I'm going to work hard every day, just like I always have. And, you know, I got to earn the trust and respect of the guys that play around me. And, you know, not only the players, but the coaches as well. They have to know that I can fill that void that JY left. And, I mean, it's still training camp. Nothing's set in stone yet. It's not week one. So I have to work like, you know, I'm a rookie just trying to make the team, and I got to bust my tail and lead these guys and have them believe in me and the coaches too. And, you know, when I think if I do that, when the dust settles, I'll be where I want to be.
When did you learn of, in other words, how long have you known that you might be considered an important cog in the team's defense? When did you learn that? At the ring ceremony, or did you find out at practice the following time?
I learned at the meeting when coach told the team that he was going to retire. So, you know, I mean, I prepare every year like I'm going to have an opportunity to start, and, you know, I leave it up to the coaches when I try to make it a hard decision for them. So I prepared all offseason like I was going to be, you know, competing for the starting free safety job. And, you know, when I found out, it was just business as usual, right? It's just work time now.
Matt, you've done a lot of different things for the team, a lot of positions. Do you see yourself now maybe settling into one position or less moving around?
Yeah. You know, I kind of, with our defense, we still move around. Like, you know, we play a lot of man coverage, so you have to be able to play all the positions. If guys go down, I might have to move to another position. So I did that last year. So I think one of the biggest things, too, about being a football player is versatility, right? And they say the more you can do, the longer you can play. And that's really what I try to craft my game around. It's not only just knowing free safety, but knowing the whole defense and helping guys out with that. And if I need to go somewhere else, then, you know, I'll step up and do what I can to help this team win.
Good. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Matt, that was Matt Black with a little interruption from Quincy Hurst. Regardless, anyway, the Eastern Division now. If you want to add something to Matt Black and Quincy Hurst, Matt.
Well, I was just thinking. You know, I was just listening to Quincy, and you know, I wrote on him for TSN.ca a couple of weeks ago, and I have a lot of respect for Quincy. He spent most of last year walking the sidelines, watching a lot of the Argos go through their paces in a new offense, and he really couldn't join in. And this is a kid who, coming from the University of Manitoba, who the Argos think really, really highly of, and they spent a whole year and just let him rehabilitate, and he got into the practice roster towards the end of the year. But this is a kid who put the work in even when he couldn't work, and I really hope, and I've seen just haven't been out to practices in a little bit. I was covering a few other assignments, but when I was there, a week and a half ago, he looked tremendous. Had some great catches. And Matt Black, I mean, listen, here's a guy who has been a great special teams piece for the Argos for a while. Switched in and out last year when there were admittedly some issues in that secondary, when there were some injuries, and when former defensive back coach Orlando Steinhauer was having some issues with the personnel. Matt Black came in and was always a usable piece. So. It's going to be, I think you're right in talking to him about it. There's going to be a lot of expected of him. And I think this year, the Argos, as much as Scott Milanovic and Chris Jones are extolling their ability to go out and find talent, that could be their weakness this year. And they have a lot of work ahead of them. But Mac Black is the kind of guy who can step up and be a leader because he knows what it takes to play in this league and what it takes to come in suddenly and perform. So I expect a lot out of him in the Argos secondary this season.
This is the year of the stadia, and by that I mean it seems like there's new stadiums everywhere. Now, granted, Hamilton won't get theirs till next year. Saskatchewan's playing in theirs now. Winnipeg's was supposed to be ready last year. Edmonton's redone the seating arrangement, if you will. BC was upgraded a couple of years ago. And then a little further back, you've got the Montreal Alouettes that began this thought process that has inched its way into the Argo psyche, which is, you know, finding an outdoor stadium somewhere that you can play that has adequate seating as opposed to too much seating and get rid of that mausoleum empty cavern. Yeah.
And they're even expanding in Montreal, which is kind of funny, you know, given that whole premise before. So that's which is funny. But when you're absolutely right in saying that, I mean, my goodness, Investors Group Field, despite all of the journalists at Winnipeg who will apparently have to be doing their work in an outdoor press box, is so bewildering, because anyone who's been to Winnipeg knows that if you're trying to do any kind of work, it's not, even if it is construction work outside,
You really don't want to be doing it in open air, so I don't know why or who had the bright idea of putting an outdoor press box for those poor people, but it looks like a wonderful stadium, which the Bombers did open tonight against the Argos, so in the first preseason game of the year. But yeah, it's what a wonderful thing. I mean, not 15 years ago we were talking about the overall viability of the CFL and if it could survive going into the new millennium, and here we are talking about renewed infrastructure, and you have Mark Cohan gushing not just about the stadiums that are being built in the existing teams, but a brand new stadium being built in Ottawa, where forever and ever people always question whether or not it could sustain a successful CFL team. So what a difference 15 years can make, and how much people can, you know, embrace this league, you know, despite all the people who still doubt its overall importance in the Canadian sports climate.
Now, the team itself, Winnipeg, will be playing in a spanking new stadium. They've got an old quarterback that apparently has really shown up. He's lost a lot of weight. He's fit. He's trim. And hopefully maybe has his injury woes behind him.
Well, that's what you hope. I mean, Blue Bombers offensive coordinator Gary Crouton has said that he has now completely refurbished his offensive package to make it so that there's more protection for Buck Pierce. I don't know why he wouldn't have done that last year, given everybody knew that Buck had issues with contact before. So I have no idea why that would have been done last year to save him all the grief that he and the Bombers had in 2012. But having said all that, I mean, you look at beyond Buck Pierce, who the Bombers have Justin Goltz after jettisoning both Alex Brink and Bill and Joey Elliott. I am lukewarm on the Bombers simply because this team wasn't necessarily Buck's fault last season because he was injured, but also completely because this team just did not have any maturity at all. I mean, we were talking about the Swaggerville defense and their bit of, you know, impudence that they showed in 2011 and how that aided them. But when they got to the big game, I mean, Odell Willis, who really was the quote mayor of Swaggerville, had a god awful game. There have been debates across the league. I know that not so much in Winnipeg, but across the league about the legitimacy of Jonathan Heffney and Javon Johnson being considered top defensive backs in the CFL. They have a lot to prove this year. And head coach Tim Burke, no longer the interim, has came out at the beginning of camp and said, hey, if we got to cut somebody, we'll cut somebody. Now he's kind of receded a bit from those comments, but there's a lot to be expected out of him. And defensive coordinator Casey Crean, who Hamilton Tiger Cat fans will remember was a rookie coordinator in the league's worst defense last year. So although there is talent across this Bombers lineup, I mean, Chris Matthews, the enormous receiver who won Rookie of the Year last year, Terrence Edwards is coming back off of some injuries. Chris Garrett will be challenging Chad Simpson, or is challenging Chad Simpson for the starting tailback job. Bryant Turner is still can be a very, very, very good defensive tackle. Kenny Maynard could be a great defensive end now that Jason Vega has gone down to the New England Patriots. I mean, all the pieces seem to be there. I just question the maturity, especially now that you hear, you know, we talk about the legal issues that Corey Sheets had. You know, Jonathan Heffney didn't even think it was important to go to his team and let them know that he had been charged with marijuana possession in the offseason. I mean, there has to be some transparency here, and you can't be forcing your head coach who really was hung out to dry. There's, you know, by, let's be honest, there was a Fire Joe Mack campaign. I mean, the general manager in Winnipeg has been really ridiculed ever since the 2011 Grey Cup. So all the pieces there, a lot of soul searching has to go on, a lot of hugging or high fives or something, because if they don't get some kind of continuity, some kind of stability there within that locker room that flows out of that locker room, all this season is going to amount to Winnipeg is just a brand spanking new stadium with a very, very disappointing team.
You know, it's funny. It's ironic, really. A rebuilt stadium that was a year delayed, a quarterback that was rebuilt a year delayed, and the team itself, management and otherwise, can't afford another delayed appearance, if you will, in the positive side of things. So Winnipeg is really not in great shape, but you never know with the CFL.
No, absolutely not. And that's a great way to put it. I mean, everything just seems like it's not happening at the pace or hasn't been happening at the pace it should have. And, you know, people have to remember, this is the team in an 8-team league. Who would have thought that there would be a team that whose fans would be waiting 23 years for a Grey Cup? Remember, the Bo Bombers haven't won a Grey Cup since 1990, when they, you know, they were coming off the tail end of what was a pretty impressive dynasty. You know, the Blue Bombers were the team of the mid to late 80s. So you really feel disappointed for it. I speak to Blue Bomber fans every so often, and you know they keep a tremendous amount of faith in the cold and the wind there in the prairies, and hopefully for them and Tim Burke and especially General Manager Jill Mack, that they kind of come together this year and figure something out, because, again, the talent is there. The body might be willing there. I just don't think they're, at this point anyway, their heads are in it. And as it's, you know, all of the stringers are playing right now to earn their jobs, but they're currently losing to the Argos 24-6. So still a lot of work to be done. So,
all right, so now we come up with Hamilton, the Jekyll and Hyde of the CFL. If a team makes the playoffs by virtue of one side of the ball, this team would have won the Grey Cup with offense, but their defense dragged them down to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Oh, and Henry Burris would have won the MOP, and or would have been challenged anyways by teammate Chris Williams. I mean, I think if there's any team that kind of challenged the premise that the CFL is solely an offensive league, where if your quarterback plays well and your receivers play well and you have a strong running game, you should be able to push on to the playoffs and maybe make a, if not a push for the Grey Cup, at least, you know, get yourself into a division final. I think Hamilton really debunks that, because Henry Burris had the best year of his career at 37 years old. And honestly, watching that defense, despite the efforts of middle linebacker Ray Williams, who is another veteran piece that went to Saskatchewan in the offseason, despite all that, George Cortez, unfortunately for him, couldn't measure up as a head coach. I just don't think I just spoke about Casey Crean, now with Winnipeg, formerly with Hamilton. I don't think Cortez and his defensive coordinator Casey Crean and his coaching staff really were able to get their message across to Hamilton last year. Not for a lack of trying. I was in the locker room at several points last season, and I saw how hard Cortez was trying to get through to his players. Maybe his message just wasn't working. Maybe they just saw a coach who, I won't say overwhelmed, because as someone who has never coached in professional football at all, it would probably be incredibly unfair for me to say, but when you don't know how to use a challenge flag, it might raise some warning signs for your players. I was trying to avoid the bit of a double pun there, but absolutely. You know, it was worrisome to watch them last year, and I remember speaking to Drew Edwards and Steve Milton of the Hamilton Spectator, and they couldn't believe that a team with an offense. Remember, Andy Fantuzzi has had his concussion problems last year, yes, but inside the red zone, he was still very efficient. This is a team that had Chris Williams, Bakari Grant, Sam Jaguar, young receivers, powerful receivers, deep threats, and they had that running back, Siobhan Walker, who seemed to do, at least for the first couple weeks of the season, every time he touched the ball, he had 12 guys on the opposite side chasing him all over the field. It just went, as soon as they went on to the defense, besides, I have to say, you know, the only time if Hamilton had played Montreal for 18 weeks, they would have won the Grey Cup, hands down, because they blew the Alouettes out of the water. But every time they faced a team that wasn't from Quebec, they just seemed to fold completely, and nothing was more embarrassing. And they were going to have to live this down for a while. And I know Ken Austin, the new head coach, is a man who is hammering the fundamentals away. But when you are beaten thoroughly by a fourth-string quarterback in at the most critical point of your season, when you have to defend a lead and you're watching Zach Kolaris of the Argos just methodically march down the field, literally from inside the Argos' own 20-yard line to set up a game-winning field goal, I mean, that in itself just encapsulated everything that went wrong with Hamilton's season. But they did. Team President Scott Mitchell, who I've spoken to on a few occasions, is not a man who suffers fools or mistakes lightly. He went out, convinced Ken Austin to come in to be the general manager and the head coach, pulled him away from Cornell, brought Orlando Steinhauer, the former defensive back coach for the Argos, who really was so influential in putting that Argo defensive back unit with a lot of rookies, besides CFL rookies, I should say, besides Jordan Younger, helped them become very formidable. Those two guys are going to be so essential to the Ticats taking a step away from the very, very horrible 2012. And they have done it very slowly. All the reports out of Hamilton are illustrating a team that's about fundamentals, that's about openness, that's about communication, that's about a bit of levity. You know, watching George Cortez's his training camp last year was a bit painful at times because these guys are being run into the ground. And, you know, they're saying now Ryan Hines, a veteran non-import defensive back, is saying of Orlando Steinhauer and head coach Ken Austin, saying, you know, these guys are treating us with respect, perhaps maybe not as much as we were receiving last year, and that's great for the morale. And what you have to do after such a horrible, paradoxical season like the Ticats had last year, what you have to do is build the morale within the locker room, and I really think Ken Austin and Orlando Steinhauer are doing that day to day.
Absolutely, and you know, the Argos are going to miss Orlando Steinhauer, but still, you know, in the CFL, we've talked a little bit about coaching. We've talked about you know, the failure of Cortez, and there have been coaches here who, you know, Toronto's had their share of coaches that have come in with ideas, grand ideas that just didn't fit the CFL. It's funny. It's like almost like a different language. And when you think that Cortez only traveled up the four, you know, up the QEW, you would think he would have had a better idea, you know, about the CFL than it appeared he had when it was all said and done.
Yeah, no, it's the thing about George Cortez is that I think he was a man who was so self-assured. This is a guy who had won. He had won a few Grey Cups in a variety. He wasn't just an offensive coordinator. This guy had won, had been part of Grey Cup winning teams as a positional coach on both sides of the ball. So I'm sure he had a ton of confidence. He clearly had proved to team president Scott Mitchell and former GM Bob Lobilovich, now retired GM Bob Lobilovich, I should say, that he could do it. And I believed it. I full disclosure, my pick to win the Grey Cup last year was Hamilton. And they, after, you know, watching John Cornish after the bye week come back, and after so many people had questioned him and whether or not he could be a starting running back in the league, and he came out and he destroyed Hamilton's defense for over 200 yards rushing and didn't even look like he was breaking a sweat, and went on to win the most outstanding Canadian with that dominant performance as his base. It just showed to me that no matter what Cortez tried to do, and he's a very learned man, he's a very philosophical man, he's a man who tried to really stimulate his players psychologically. When he couldn't do that, it just showed me that not only did I get it wrong, but so many people got it wrong, and really the Ticats brass got it wrong, and really relying on Cortez. At the end of the day, it takes something really special to be a head coach, and George Cortez just didn't have it.
Does Dan Hawkins have it in Montreal?
Well, that's the big question. I spoke to Coach Hawkins last week when I was in Sherbrooke. A lot of energy. I mean, I wrote about this also for TSN's website. I mean, the guy was running up and down the field. If if he could pull his 80-odd players behind him, he would have. I mean, he just a ton of energy. Jim Popp, the general manager, has gone to unconventional lengths to bring in guys that you might not consider for CFL jobs, and he did it with Mark Trestman, and, you know, Mark Trestman went on to be, you know, very much a Marv Levy type, an American coach coming into Canada and just immediately excelling in the CFL because he got it. He understood, as we spoke about off the top, that it is a different league, a different identity, and you need a different approach. At the end of the day, though, when you look, those who are trying to compare Dan Hawkins with Mark Trestman, you can't. Mark Trestman had established himself as a very well-respected offensive coordinator and offensive positional coach in the NFL, had groomed great quarterbacks or helped great quarterbacks like Bernie Kosar and Rich Gannon really adapt as quarterbacks and still succeed later in their careers. Dan Hawkins went to Boise State about 10 years ago and helped develop that program into maybe he didn't take it to the heights when they won the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago, but he really helped bring that program into the upper echelons of NCAA football. It wasn't as successful at Colorado State, but you know, his head coaching record professionally can't be denied, and it's 0-0-0. This guy's coming in. He's learning on the fly. He doesn't think that there's much difference between coaching in college and coaching professionally. He's going to learn pretty quickly that there is. Even someone like myself, as I've already said, is not coached professionally. You can see after what George Cortez went through last year, even positional coaches who have won championships in the pros, when they make that transition to the head coaching ranks, it is a different world altogether, and you have to think about so many variables. But Hawkins has the enthusiasm. He's not a stupid guy. This guy is has an incredible football mind. He sees all the details. He was able to, through the course of practice I was watching, go to almost every single positional coach and every player in almost every position and give them a tidbit and talk to them about improvements, just subtle improvements they were making, and the players were receptive. And that's the key with a guy who's trying to gain respect in a locker room because he doesn't have the resume that a Mark Trestman has, to come in and establish himself immediately and earn the respect immediately of his players is invaluable. The fact is, though, that Eastern Division isn't one that Montreal owns anymore. Hamilton will be looking to rebound, as we've already discussed. Winnipeg, despite their mental lapses, could be a threat. And the Toronto Argonauts, under Scott Milanovic, got better and better towards the end of the season and won the Grey Cup. It's not a foregone conclusion anymore that Montreal will dominate in the East, and Dan Hawkins has to be aware of that.
Yeah, this could also be the year where a Western team won't cross over. I think it's going to be tough for Edmonton to cross over this year, mainly because they'll be playing BC Calgary and Saskatchewan too often.
No, it's a great point. I mean, when you got to face those three teams, I mean, you know, and you don't know who your quarterback's going to be yet. Yeah, no, there could be a few problems.
All right, let's move on to the team that I follow, and that would be the Toronto Argonauts. You know, the big question is, can they repeat, and will the coaching changes that they've gone through survive, you know, the test?
Well, I have to say that the guy who is under the most scrutiny this year for the Argonauts has to be new defensive back coach Eddie Brown. I don't know the kind of coach he is yet. We knew who Orlando Steinhauer was when he coached those defensive backs, but we're going to see how he is going to manage those defensive backs, how much faith Chris Jones is going to put in him and all those new pieces. Now with Jordan Younger gone, last year the big question was those defensive backs and all the new pieces throughout Toronto's defense heading into their Grey Cup winning year. That defense was seen as their weakest link. I still think that's the case, not only because they have lost all of those key pieces, and particularly above all else Jordan Younger, but also Ahmad Carroll, who also retired, because they just don't have the same recognized face as their coach. Now, if you watch and you've seen it already, Frank, if you watch the on Argos practice, you know Chris Jones runs that pretty thoroughly. So he is going to keep all his coaches honest, but it's really going to be incumbent upon Coach Brown to take everything by the scruff of the neck, to take his new players. Hopefully they get Patrick Watkins back. They'll have Pacino Horn, apparently. But Jahlil Carter at this point is the Grey Cup veteran, the only starting piece in that Grey Cup secondary. It's going to be interesting to see how Coach Brown deals with the vacancies and the incoming bodies and the few pieces that remain. But throughout this Argos lineup, there's one thing that at Scott Milanovich, when I spoke to him the first couple of days, and general manager Jim Barker said, it's stability and it's consistency and it's cohesion. This team, they believe, has moved from strength to strength and can be better coming off of their Grey Cup winning year. Offensively, you can't deny that. There were so many issues with that offensive line. A couple of, the experiment last year was they were going to play five Canadians to maybe get around some ratio issues. They ended up putting Tony Washington at left tackle, the big American, and he had a fine season. But you look through that up to Ricky Ray, you know he's going to be good. Ricky, he took some time to develop last year, but when crucially, you go back to that Saskatchewan game towards the end of the year where the Argos were in Regina, Ricky had a great game, and he just was fantastic all the way down the stretch. Chad Cackard, what can you say about a guy who didn't have the starting job the year before, hadn't really had much experience as a starter before then, came in and was not just the rusher that the Argos needed, but the pass blocker that they needed. And the receivers, although there had been, so much was put on Chad Owens, but when they needed guys to step up, Jason Barnes, who was released earlier in the season, came back, had a strong finish, and a guy I think could have a tremendous, tremendous year this year, Dontrell Inman. The guy has fantastic hands. He's put on some weight. He's put on some size. And the whispers that I'm hearing around the league is, and I tend to agree with them, is that this guy could potentially be a divisional all-star this year, could most certainly be a 1,000-yard receiver. And then you bring in a piece like Rombie Bryant, of that great and still mesmerizing, given the injury, pass from Drew Tate to Bryant last year in the Western semifinal. And then, of course, there's apparently the fastest receiver that general manager Jim Barker has ever seen, John Childs, who is in Argos camp as well, who's impressing. So all the pieces seem to be there for a repeat. The thing is, in the CFL, everything is unpredictable. Anything can happen. We could be talking about the Argos having a god-awful year coming into week four. My goodness, even though they started Trevor Harris in tonight's preseason game against Winnipeg, would they do the same if Ricky Ray went down? Would they be desperate to bring in? Because remember, Kevin Glenn might be looking for a team. Would they want to trade for Kevin Glenn if Ricky Ray went down? I know these things sound absurd, but in the CFL, it's just hour to hour it can change. So, yes, the Argos look very good for a run, at least to repeat as division finalists. But, again, my goodness, they could be having a horrible year come the middle of August. But, right now, head coach Scott Milanovich, and apparently he said this after the Grey Cup, my reliable sources do suggest that he wasn't very celebratory after the Grey Cup because, as one person said, he looked at a bunch of friends and said, just wait until we're good. So if that's the kind of confidence the coach has, given his head coach of the year, season in his rookie season as a head coach, how could you deny the Argos chances?
Well, there obviously is a team chemistry there, and by that I mean the GM and the coach, the head coach. They really are on the same page. And Jim Barker is not a guy who plays around. If he's not happy with you, you're gone.
Yep.
He doesn't fool around.
Yep. Yep.
So
no, that's,
you know,
no, it's a fantastic point. I mean, I didn't mean to, sorry for cutting you off, but that's exactly the point. I mean, Jim Barker has said time and again, I do not in these words explicitly, but I do not suffer fools. And, tonight the Argos pull off the 24-6 win against the Blue Bombers, and without, mind you, without a lot of their key offensive pieces, you know, and even defensive piece. I mean, my goodness, we haven't even talked about Khalif Mitchell yet, and what he could do for that Argos defensive line. But he wasn't even playing tonight, and the Argos have won. You know, a couple of years ago, we were talking about the Argos and really what was a toxic atmosphere in Toronto. And they have really done, full credit to Jim Barker, he really has done some really great things by bringing Scott Milanovich on board, Chris Jones on board, and now new offensive coordinator Marcus Brady. You know, stability in Toronto, my goodness. Right now, the only thing that the Argos need to, well, the two things, unfortunately, the Argos need to worry about is a practice facility and a stadium. Because with what they have on the field right now, there are no issues, and it's been a very, very long time since we've talked about stability and the Toronto Argonauts in the same sentence.
Okay, let's take a short break, and we'll just take a couple of commercial breaks. We'll come back, clean up, and do a little housekeeping on the season. Maybe discuss some issues that we didn't discuss that might be of relevance. You actually touched on the one that I wanted to touch on. When we get back, we'll do that. All right, you're listening to Candid Frank Live, streamed on Rouge Radio, and I'm here with Matthew Skinniti. He is of TSN, and he writes for TSN.ca. If you want to follow him on a regular basis, just go to TSN. And this is the company he works for.
Travis Lule.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him. Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's accurate,
articulate.
He's a winner,
champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning. TSN 1050.
CO2.
Chad Owens. Favorite player ever.
He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good, he's real good.
He's into MMA.
From the gridiron to the octagon.
He's got game.
This is his game.
He's the total package.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man.
Team player. Dedication to the max.
True blue through and through.
I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning.
1, 2, 3.
We're the Argos cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Oh, 1, 2, 3. We're the Argos cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Go Frank. Go Frank.
Go Frank.
Go Frank.
There we go, Frank.
There
you
go. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And, of course, we're streamed on Rouge Radio. Thank you to Jason Sperling. We've made a connection. And I got to start getting promos now for... that include both our names. And you know, it's hard sometimes, Matt, to have people say something that's kind of, you know, that aren't used to it. I kept asking them to do Candid Frank Live streamed on Rouge Radio, but they couldn't do it. And I understand why. It's a laugh, to say the least.
Well, you know, they were chanting your name, which is a lot more than a lot of men might get out of those girls. So that's you count yourself very, very lucky, sir.
Okay, with the last couple of minutes that we've got left, let's do something for the company that you work for, TSN. I've mentioned on this show before I even knew you, before I even had you on the program, I've always been happy with the job that TSN does, that they've done over the years. They've created this Friday Night Football package, which is really doing really well. They've now turned the corner, and that being the CFL, that they're no longer just sharing revenue. They're also paying the CFL to show their games. It's been a real good story for TSN and the CFL, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, it's, again, we need to go back to my point, you know, 15 years ago, we're talking about the overall viability of the Canadian Football League. And, you know, you have to respect what the CBC did for a long time and being a very proud partner of the CFL, but what TSN has been able to do, and this is, you know, it sounds almost self-serving given that I'm an employee of the company now, but before, just watching it from afar, you know, seeing guys like Glenn Suter, Chris Schultz, Jock Climie, Matt Dunnigan, see the kind of passion they speak with the game and how they've been able to really affect how Canadians see the CFL, and the results have come in the ratings. You have occasionally, and this is no word of a lie, you have occasionally the CFL, when compared to some hockey games that TSN has during the hockey season, drawing as much, if not just a little bit more, than some NHL games. Not saying it's on par with hockey in this country. Nothing could defeat hockey in this country. But to know that CFL is in the mindset of Canadians, at least to a recognizable point, like hockey is, it's pretty tremendous. Given how we were seeing not near empty stadiums, but a lot of empty seats throughout the league and 10-15 years ago. So it's a tremendous thing, and you know, the TSN has really worked really closely with the CFL in developing a strong brand. So 100 first Grey Cup, strong TV deal, strong TV revenue, new stadiums coming in. Overall, you could only think the CFL is moving strength to strength and now expanding. You know, we are still talking about not just Ottawa coming in, but possibly a 10th CFL team coming in. We do have Touchdown Atlantic. It is the ongoing market project to see if there can be a viable marketplace, a viable team out in the Atlantic provinces. You know, we oftentimes forget about the market share out there and how many eyeballs, sports fanatics live in a very concentrated area between, you know, what is, you know, three or four provinces. So a lot of untapped potential still for the CFL, which is obviously tremendous news for not just Mark Cohan, but the executives with TSN.
Coast to coast, for sure. And like you, I was at the Grey Cup game. Now, I bought my ticket. You probably got in for free, Mr. TSN guy. But I paid
for
my ticket.
Well, no, I was working for the league then. I was, funny enough, I was working for the league at that point, writing for their website.
Oh.
But yes, no, I can't deny that I was I did enjoy it from the all the festivities from a press box.
That stadium, you know, if it were possible to have at least an 80 or an 85% filled stadium for Argo games, I'm going to call it the Sky Dome now, the Rogers Centre would be appropriate, would be a great stadium. You referred to earlier that Montreal's expanding, going beyond, I guess, the 30,000 seats that they had prior?
Well, I think they were, it was about 19,000 at McGill, and funny enough, I was actually just in Montreal last week, and I walked up the hill of the McGill campus going on to Mount Royal and just watched or was looking at some of the additions they've made. Very, very slight additions, much like they've done at Commonwealth Stadium, just adding new seats in. But just expanding nonetheless, adding a couple hundred seats, which is still great, because that, you know, for a while we were talking about it. It's, you know, a lot of people tried not to make it a comparable situation, but the Olympic Stadium really was cavernous. Was a cavernous pit for the Alouettes for a while. Now it can be a second home during the playoffs, but it really had become a bit of an issue. So, you know, the Ticats on their end have downsized their new stadium just a little bit. It'll just be a smidge over, I think, or just under 25,000, potential to expand, obviously, for any future Grey Cups. But the Argos, I really think, it's going to be interesting to see what they do, especially if the Blue Jays and the ownership group there, Rogers, decides to, as been long talked about, cement the posts in the outfield and put natural grass in the Rogers Center and give that now aging, my goodness, we're talking about what was once a revolutionary stadium, now an aging Sky Dome, or once called the Sky Dome, now the Rogers Center. If they're trying to make those posts permanent so they couldn't switch it for football configuration, I still think discussions have to be had about the viability of the BMO Field option, even though a lot of soccer fans in the city will turn their noses up at it, or if there's potential to develop a stadium in the Downsview Park area north of the city, which is still the largest chunk of undeveloped land in Toronto, which is kind of hard, which is kind of amazing to say given how much development there is in the city. So as much as there is stability and good feelings league round and in the city in terms of the CFL, there's still a lot of issues the Argos have to tackle, and a new stadium and a new practice facility are paramount among them.
It's kind of sad that we ended it on a sad note, Matthew.
Well,
with all the good news we talked about,
well, you could flip it to say that that there are things there's still things to think about. As Chris Rudge always likes to tell me, you know, that at every game there's a smile and a handshake to be had. So I guess if you see it that way, as most gregarious businessmen would want to. You can see as the potential, and that's what you have to say with the CFL. If there's one word that's encapsulated the last maybe decade and a half, it has to be potential. And I really think that's what the Argos still have. You know, the most successful team in CFL history still has a lot of potential, and I fully expect them to capitalize on at least hopefully some potential avenues in the future. So it might sound like some gray clouds at the end, but I still think there's a lot of positives to be had.
Well, I think there's a good chance that the cowboy riding the white horse may, you know, work its way over the horizon.
Yeah,
it could happen. It's happened before; it'll happen again. I don't think the CFL. Is that disrespected that Toronto would be stuck without a stadium? I'm sure somebody out there would put some pressure somewhere to make something real happen. Really, you know, that's more reflective of the city and, you know, the 8-9 million people that live in the near vicinity of the team. It's just, it boggles my mind, I'll tell you. Well, listen, we've overrun a little bit, and I hope Kevin doesn't get mad at me. Kevin Garbullo is waiting to be on. We're going to be talking amateur football. Matthew Scaniti of TSN and TSN.ca. Thank you, sir. It was a real pleasure, and I hope you'll have time to come on again.
My pleasure, Frank. Thanks for having me, and talk to you soon.
Very soon. Later, my friend.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. I don't like that one. A short break, because we don't want to be gone long. I'm picking something a little shorter because I want to get to Mr. Garbullo. You know what? Let's go with... yeah, why not? We'll go with Chad Owens. A short interview. Wait a second, not that one. I got a better one with Chad. Where are you? Oh, let's... No, Kackert. No, no. Khalif Mitchell. Nah. Ricky Ray? You guys want to hear Ricky Ray? You know what? Let's go to college, and we'll go to your coach, Coach Craney. That's the shortest one I've got.
Argos training camp bumped into Coach Craney, York University coach.
I wanted to talk to you about this program that the CIS and the CFL have of bringing in quarterbacks to train with the CFL team. I've heard that that's been a real rousing success.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's great. Anytime we can, you know, promote Canadian contest, especially at the quarterback position, you know, I think it's so beneficial for the Canadian game and for young Canadians, you know, playing that the quarterback position.
I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for the individual player who has aspirations of being a quarterback, but they're really into it, a tough battle, because it's not about talent, it's about training and experience, and the Canadian players just don't have the same amount as the American quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know what, it's definitely an issue. I think we're doing a better job. I know coaches and I know Football Canada, they're putting a stronger emphasis on the position. You know, one of the big things we've found in some experience I have in the U.S., one of the big differences of that position is the sport of baseball. You know, a lot of quarterbacks in the U.S. grow up 2 years old learning how to throw a baseball. And, you know, it's the throwing sport and that throwing motion that further enhances their training capability. So, but again, I think Football Canada has addressed it, and I think they're doing the best they can in order to rectify that situation.
Let's switch gears now. Let's talk about your team. What do we have to look forward to with the Argos?
You got a lot to look forward to. It's, you know, this is the first year where it's really my team. Everyone on that team is someone I recruited and brought into the program, so I'm very excited about that. I think we're going to be a competitive thing, a very competitive team, and, you know, our only nemesis this year is going to be youth, and that's not a bad thing, I think.
Well, you have to build from that, don't you?
You have to build from that, yep.
Experience only comes with experience.
Exactly, and we're going to get a lot of that this year. You know, we were a very young team last year, did some great things, you know, finishing, you know, third in the OUA in offense. You know, defense, we got to tighten up a few things, you know. Very tough schedule this year, but we're excited for that. That's how we're going to get better, is by playing the better teams.
Well, congratulations on having all the players you want.
Excellent.
And I hope they develop at a speed, at a rate of speed that you can live with.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I used to.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be offensive. Be radical.
The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Go, go, go. Woo! Be offensive. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You having a little popcorn?
Joining me now is Kevin Garbullo. Did play football at the university level. He's an expert now at CIS football. And first of all, Kevin, how are you doing tonight? Kevin? Kevin didn't realize we're on a commercial, I guess. Okay. Let's see. Should I play a commercial? No, you know what? There is an interview I'd like to... Earlier this week, I think yesterday, in fact, or the day before yesterday or Monday, one of those 2 days, it was announced who was going to host, of course, the Vanier Cup. And now we know that they have a sponsor, and the sponsor is TELUS. And TELUS, obviously, is a big enough corporation that can handle and has the experience to handle this kind of event. And, it's important that college football and the Vanier Cup, it's important to remember that as has the CFL improved, so has college football, the CIS. They've drawn very well. They've sold out the Sky Dome as well, or I should say the Rogers Center. They were out in BC. They had some great success there as well. And when you talk about success in football, it's not hard to talk about Quebec. And this year, the game will be in Quebec. And here's a presser that happened a day or two ago. The 49th Vanier Cup has a sponsor. It's TELUS. The game will be played in 2013 in Quebec City. The CIS Vanier Cup, the championship of all the universities in Canada. Here are some sound bites at the press conference. Gilles Lepine, co-chair of the 2013 TELUS Vanier Cup.
Very confident. The fact that the Vanier receive, we receive a lot, we're hosting a lot of championships. Just thinking about the soccer men that we host this year, volleyball men that we host again. We'll have a rugby woman just 3 weeks before the Vanier Cup. So we're used to do that. We're happy because our organizing committee is very well organized, with big experience. So with that, we're confident, the infrastructure too, that help us to be there.
Christian Côté, co-chair of the 2013 TELUS Vanier Cup.
Very happy as well to work with Jill and all the people of the organizing committee. It's a challenge for us, but it's a great challenge. We're kind of used to that. We get great crowds each and every week. So it's going to be a big event.
Jean-François Saint-Germain, VP Quebec Region and Public Markets, TELUS.
Well, it was a natural for us. We're entering the second year of a 20-year partnership with Université Laval. We have our name on the stadium. So for us to be the main sponsor of this not only a natural, but we have the support of all the TELUS members of Quebec City, which the majority are graduates.
There you go. Now, the CIS really doesn't heat up until about August. College football spends a little time. Let me try. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna hang up on Kevin, and then I'm gonna hang up, and then I'm gonna call him again. His number is still here. I'll see if I can get him. What the heck? Here, Let's give it a shot. Don't know why he couldn't hear me, but, you know, every so often there are technical difficulties. And it's dialing, but I'm not hearing it. There we go. Call completed.
Oh,
hey, buddy, there you are.
Record your message.
Oh, really? No, you're not there. I got his mess. I got his answering machine. Oh, that's too funny. That's way too funny. All right. Well, you know what? I've got a great interview here. There's a couple of things I wanted to talk to him about, like Kyle Quinlan and that. And if and when we get a hold of him, we do have some interviews that we can put in. And there is a relatively long one because I need a break myself. And you know, it has been discussed for many years now that you know, the University of Toronto hasn't really had that good a football program. The question arises whether they care or not. Regardless of that, somebody who did a great job in Toronto, defensively, they're like ranked number one. His name's Donovan Carter. If you don't know who he is, I'll refresh your memory. Played for the Toronto, or actually played for all the Eastern teams. Donovan Carter is now, here, let's the interview go.
Former first-round draft choice of the Toronto Argonauts, defensive coach for the University of Toronto Blues, will be more than just a football coach for the University of Windsor Lancers. At the ripe old age of 37, Carter, who spent the past four seasons as the defensive coordinator at the University of Toronto, is the Lancers' new full-time associate head coach and defensive coordinator. Along with his duties, Coach Carter will also be required to teach, come up with fundraising initiatives for the football program, as well as handle recruiting for the team. This role progresses my career, said Carter, who was the fourth overall pick in the 2000 Canadian Football League draft and spent seven seasons in the league playing linebacker and safety for the Toronto Argonauts, Ottawa, Hamilton, and Winnipeg. There's other parts and contributions I would like to make. Lancers head coach Joe DeMore said there were 30 applicants for the job, but Carter's coaching background and roots in the Toronto area set him apart. While the Varsity Blues have struggled in the win column in recent years, Carter's defense has made an impact. 2 years ago, Toronto had the number one pass defense despite being 2-6, Carter reminded us. Carter, who is from Brampton, also served as a defensive coordinator with the Etobicoke of the Ontario Varsity Football League. It's a tough area for us to recruit and creates a lot of challenges, DeMore said of the GTA. He's concerned for the connection to the players in that area is big. While not deep in knowledge about the Windsor area school, he does know a graduate of that school, his brother Michael, who received a Bachelor of Commerce degree. Windsor coach DeMore said that with seven CFL seasons under his belt, speaking of Carter, and 4 years coaching at the CIS level, again Carter, has nothing to prove to his players. Donovan not only has experience running a defense at the CIS level, but his extensive playing career in the CFL gives him instant credibility with our players, DeMore said. He brings a sound defensive system that will allow our players to play fast and adapt quickly. Windsor and Carter will blend well in the city of hard work. I want my defense known for hard work, Carter said. Bring your hard hat. Be physical and aggressive to the ball. Improving on back-to-back playoff appearances will be Carter's leadership goal, and taking another step the OUAA football standings is his aim. There's a lot of great athletes here, Carter said. I'm going to promote competition. I want the guys to embrace that. I think that will help us. That kind of makes bad teams good teams and good teams very good teams if you have a great competition in there and make tough decisions for the coaching staff. I ran into Donovan Carter at the Argo training facility, and this is what we talked about.
CIS has a program where they're developing quarterbacks. Can you give us your opinion on how that's working and what you see that doing in the future for football, for Canadian quarterbacks?
I think it's a great opportunity to get kids exposure to come out to camp and get the type of coaching they do. You know, the issue is, do we have enough coaches, capable quarterbacks to get to all the CFL camps and, you know, take advantage of that type of opportunity, you know. But I think it's great for the game. You know, will it lead to a quarterback? That would be the hope, and that would be something I would look forward to seeing.
It doesn't hurt to give the quarterbacks an opportunity to develop. The one problem that Canadian quarterbacks have is that they don't come out of, you know, the kind of training that American quarterbacks go through. In a way, what you're doing here is, I guess, at least the CIS is doing, is trying to introduce the quarterbacks to let them know there might be a future. They get a chance to develop. Where what we have now is we have a ceiling that happens. It's no fault of anybody in particular. It just means we've got to work harder, I guess, to create quarterbacks and give them the confidence that there's a job waiting for them at some point.
Yeah, no question. Because you know what, they get coached so well from a young age in the U.S., and there's definitely a catching up that needs to be done at that position. That would be, I mean, like I said, I think there's a lot of good young quarterbacks with the ability of playing our game. I think that's their advantage, learning our game from a young age, the wider field. And now let's see if we can give them the tools to take advantage of that.
And know what they need to do, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Canadian college football sometimes seems to be, you know, four or five teams run, basically overpower the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see in the future where there might be a little more of a balanced situation, and or what do we need to create that, or to, you know, create an atmosphere of a more competitive side in the CIS?
I think it's well on the way. I think a lot of the teams that were traditionally at the bottom of the division, particularly in the OUA, have definitely closed that gap. So it has to happen with recruiting and the resources that each program has. And that's what, like you said, the strong has stayed strong because they've been able to keep a lot of the top recruits. But now with more balanced, good coaching going to different schools, I think some of the prospects coming out are going and making up different choices than they did in the past, and not just going to this program that's at the top of the division. So, you know, with that and with Windsor. Windsor's done a good job now of getting into the playoffs for the last few years, and, you know, I've been brought over there to see if I can help them take the next step and start to contend with some of the perennial powerhouses in our division and across the country.
Tell me about where your team's at and where you see the progress.
And it keeps hanging up.
A lot of good kids out there. Great talent pool in the Windsor area. The offense has done exceptionally well over the past few years, Joe going in there and solidifying that with recruiting as well. And you know, my hope is to come in there and bring that structure to the defensive side and see if we can get them competing as well as they're doing on the offense, on defense there. You know, they have the personnel, and it's for me to just put a system so the kids, you know, fly around and make plays on defense.
How about a couple of names that we should... All right. Kevin, are you there?
Yes.
Kevin? Oh, my goodness. We've had... I couldn't hang on to you. I called you, and I apologize to the listeners, and most of all, I apologize to you. I've been phoning you for – I know we finished a little late with the CFL round, but it wasn't – it's been like 15, 20 minutes now of disaster trying to get a hold of you. Anyway, regardless, let's just jump in. I just played an interview with Donovan Carter. You know, great CFL player. There are a lot of great CFL players coaching around the country, aren't there?
Yes, across the board. Even I'm currently coaching right now in the OFC, the junior OFC, where just varsity. And Jesse Lumsden's father is the Hall of Fame fullback. He's his father's coach. It was coaching the Burlington Stampeders in their perennial powerhouse. And you see players giving back all across the board. And it's nice to see football players from all over giving back, especially CFL players who have all the wealth of wisdom, especially in this country.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about your favorite subject, and that is CIS. Do you want to start in Quebec?
Yeah, we'll start in Quebec. The big news, especially coming out, is we knew last time I was on the show, we were talking about how Laval was given or awarded the Vanier Cup, and it was going to be at TELUS Stade, formerly known as Pep's Stadium. And it just came out recently that TELUS is going to be the big ticket sponsor for the Vanier Cup this year, which is really nice to see, especially being named so early, because usually we haven't had the luxury of seeing a big sponsor, especially of TELUS's size, sponsoring a bowl game, a Vanier Cup game, that's not even linked. It's not being piggybacked by the CFL this year. It's not being piggybacked by the Grey Cup, and that's a huge step forward for the CIS.
And they really have developed a bit of independence. In fact, TELUS is also sponsoring, the Women's Rugby Championship a couple of weeks earlier. So you know, TELUS is in there with CIS, and the CIS, college football has really developed a name on their own. The Vanier Cup is a well-understood brand.
Yeah, it is definitely a huge brand. It's a big tournament. It's a big deal, and the playoffs especially have been great football. Not say last year where everyone was anticipating Calgary and McMaster to be the real Vanier Cup final, and Calgary didn't show up, and then McMaster went on to lose to Laval. But we've had some great games in the past. Off the top of my head, Queens Laval a few years ago was a fantastic matchup. The Vanier Cup 2 years ago, where we went to overtime with Laval marching back to come back down 21 points, eventually losing to McMaster. That was a great game as well, and it's nice to see that it's starting to build its own brand. And the interesting thing is, with TELUS sponsoring the Vanier Cup, it's the CIS's recent agreement with Rogers to be shown on all their networks. So I don't know where it falls. I don't think that's been announced yet. It's going to be on the newly announced Sportsnet 360, which the Score is turning into, or if it's going to be on the other platforms, whether it be Sportsnet 1 or all the other local networks.
Well, it is about time, because in fact Rogers, the excuse they had for having so many channels was that they were going to provide coverage for Canadian sports, and I can't think of a better Canadian sport than Canadian football played at the university level.
I know Canadian football, especially, which is so regional. You have the Quebec. People say that their viewership's through the roof. Like on the SRC, why not tap into the English portion of that? And I don't know the figures exactly, but University Rush on the Score has been fairly successful, and I know they've been having great games on there. Talking to Donovan Bennett whenever he's on this program, you see him. He's been covering great games at the Score now, Sportsnet 360. And out west, they're covered on Shaw, and it'd be nice to see them get a national broadcast. The AUS as well, they're on Eastlink. It'd be nice to see them get. I don't think they've had a national game. Seeing two AUS teams pitted against each other nationally, I don't think that's been since probably 2007. Maybe 2007, I think, was actually the last year where Acadia faced St. Mary's, and that was when Eric Glavick was running the show in St. Mary's. So it's been a long time to see that on national. We see the Mitchell Bowl on TSN. I have no idea if it's going to be on, the Mitchell Bowl is still with TSN, or hopefully it'll move over with Rogers as well. If Rogers is giving all this money and airtime, it'd be nice to see them build the brand, because TSN, for all it's done, they're only there for they're only Mitchell Bowl, and they're there for, say, the UTEC, and the Mitchell, and then the Vanier. They you give 2 weeks of coverage, maybe 30 seconds a weekend in highlights. It's nice to see Rogers say, all right, we're putting the money down. We're putting this down. We're going to build the brand, not just football. We got all the other sports. So
absolutely,
it's going to be nice. The visibility is huge.
Yeah, well, you know, not to give up my age and make you feel very young, but here in the metro area, CHCH Channel 11, the first television station, by the way, in Canada, had their CIAU at the time, they called them, their games, right? And they would show all the different sports that are played at university on Saturday afternoons, I believe. Is it possible that Rogers can create because what I think the successful thing that TSN did with the CFL is they created that Friday night football thing. And you know, it really rings, you know, it rings true. You know, it attracts people. They know on Friday night, there's a doubleheader. I can watch CFL on Friday night. Is there a day that you see in your mind that would be preferable for, university sports?
The Score tried the University Rush in Saturday afternoon, and so many people are doing so many things in the afternoon. In Quebec, it definitely works Saturday afternoon. The ratings are big for that. If you ever go to any games in Quebec, they're all fairly well attended, minus, say, McGill, which is competing with all the other distractions that you can have in Montreal. But I think Saturday afternoon would be okay if they brand it properly. The CFL was on TSN, but it wasn't getting the viewership. They come up with this Friday Night Football. They come up with a jingle, and they put money to it. They presented it. They production, and people said, oh, okay, I'm going to start watching. If they put the money in, if they built it up, Saturday during the day would be fine. What are you competing in on Canadian television on Saturday afternoon? You go to CBC, you see skiing, you see figure skating, and not those sports, but that's what you're competing with. You have American college football, I guess, to a certain extent, but there's Canadian purists. And maybe if they build up on this is Canada's game, this is the importance of Canadian football and how it is so Canadian, the essence of it, and that there's so many people who, Canadian hockey, Canadian this, but then when, oh, American football. So people like to pick and choose what they're patriotic about, but if they really built up the importance of the CIS and built up the how it's almost a feeder to the CFL now, that might help.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there does have to be a commitment by television. And if there has to be a commitment by the CRTC, you know, in suggesting that there isn't enough of a commitment, you know, there are, my goodness, you know, Toronto, the Metro Toronto area, Southern Ontario is inundated with hockey games. You know, every night there's a hockey game. Then even in the afternoons. And it's, I'm not against hockey. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, baseball, Rogers Sportsnet. I mean, there's baseball. You know, it almost seems like there's like 18 baseball games on. And I think, you know, it wouldn't hurt the networks and wouldn't hurt their bottom line that much if they gave up a baseball game on a Saturday afternoon to show football instead on a regular basis. And I don't want to sound cold or callous, but they have to show the good teams playing. You know, unfortunately, that's the reality of television. You have to put your best foot forward, and there's no other way around it. And I think that the quality of football that's played by the better university teams that are committed to football is the way to go. And the better the games that you see, the more interest there will be in coming back. I don't think it's that hard. Not to crack. I don't think.
Agreed fully. Look at any sport. Look at the Chicago Cubs in baseball. They've been trashed for how long? People want them because their viewership, because they have a fan base. Same with Notre Dame. When Notre Dame is a 500 team, they're still going to bowl games because networks, you know, people will tune in. If you show the Westerns, the Queens, the Lavals of the world, say Laval just for they're the best team, but then you show the teams that have a huge alumni, alumni that's powerful and travels and watches their team play. Well, you put them on TV, their fans are going to view. So that makes perfect sense. And trying to put a team, you watch sometimes and they have York, UFT, and not to knock either of those teams, they're both on the upswing. But say 3 years ago, you have York, UFT on TV. It's, all right, well, who does either team have? And there's not, you're just putting it out there. If you put up a big game, you put up a Queens Western or any homecoming game where the atmosphere is there, that'll get a huge viewership. Well, what
isn't
kind
that
of games
the key?
Do you want to watch?
You hit the nail on
the
head.
Definitely.
All right, it's the atmosphere. You know, it's all about atmosphere and hype. Let's face it, that's what it is today. Today, you know, you got to convince people it's the place to be. You know, and if you're advertising empty stadiums and dull crowds and football teams that. I'm not naming names here, okay? That's not what I'm trying to do here. But if the teams suck, so does the viewership. You got no choice, you know? You gotta build up the brand by building up the teams and show. I mean, look what the Americans do on U.S. television when it comes to hockey. They refuse to show Canadian teams. Why is that? Because they believe there's no interest in the Canadian teams, so they show only American teams playing American teams. It's the reality of television today. If you want to sell something, It's got to have a nice package, and it's got to have a nice glow. And if it doesn't, don't expect it to sell just because you think it's Canadian. You know, you really have to work at making it look good. And TSN has done a wonderful job of making the CFL look professional. The games are covered beautifully, and the games are good games. That's the importance of, you know, selling television, selling ads. You got to make it look like it's something people want to be a part of.
Well, if you're going to show exactly that, and the CIS, obviously there's some teams that struggle. There's teams that that are rebuilding or growing, or sometimes have fallen off their way, and they shouldn't be on TV. Obviously, the big team should be rewarded. I know maybe that doesn't sound right, but you watch
no,
LaValle,
no, it sounds
you go
perfectly
to a LaValle
right.
game. Yeah.
Kevin, don't be apologetic. Don't be apologetic.
Yeah,
you know, the good teams deserve to be shown on the air. You know, just like Hockey Night in Canada doesn't replace the game on Saturday night with an AHL game. Come on. They put the best teams out there. That's what you have to do. I don't know if that's a problem in the CIS. Well, whether when they make a deal to show television, whether they feel that they have to be fair and show all the teams, they've got to do what's right for the organization long term. And you've got to put your best foot forward. And you know, you're covering a great sport. I've had good fortune to watch some of the games, the Vanier Cup games. I can't remember a disappointing Vanier Cup game. Can you remember one?
Well, they've been in the past. Recently, when you get an OUA team versus a Quebec team, they've been fairly well. They've been great turnouts. The issue seems to be right now is that just trying to knock off LaValle. But it's always nice seeing that team beat LaValle, and that's what. Going back to LaValle, you go to a LaValle game. There's the atmosphere. You even at the game. So you go to different stadiums, different AUS, different Q stadiums, different OUA. I haven't been to any West games yet, unfortunately. I'm hoping to go to some in the fall, but you see it very quiet, or there's not that many people. You go to LaValle and people are having fun. They're partying. They're having a tailgate party, and everyone's having a good time. They have a big screen where they have showing people partying, and it's encouraged,
and it's all part
that tailgate atmosphere.
Well, you know, you're right. Well, why don't we move over? You may not have been in the West, but tell us a little bit about what's going on. So, LaValle's the big story in Quebec. Out West, what are the big stories out West?
Well, out West this year, this is the one thing that Jim Mullen was mentioning, is that there might be an expansion out West. In the West Conference, everyone knows about the teams leaving. They've had football teams leaving, like Simon Fraser has left, and they're trying to rebuild it. But the Okanagan Sun, which is in the CJFL of the OFC, or not the OFC, the CJFL of the West Division, sorry, they're trying to get a team going at their university. So they're trying to get a bit of an expansion. And the way that they're doing, interestingly enough, is they're going to take their junior team and just have it feed seamlessly into their CIS team, which I think is a fantastic idea, so that you don't have to go through the growing pains. People know the system, and then you have your players just move quickly into it, and then you don't have to really go through the growing pains. But it's really nice to see the West try and grow their game right now, because they've had issues with losing a team. Obviously, Simon Fraser leaving hurts them, and they've had some teams struggle. Alberta's in a bit of rebuilding, but it'd be nice to see that part of the country grow and get more talent and get better, because as everyone knows, the heart of the CFL is the West. The West and fans are the best ones for football. So if they could build up their CIS portion of it, that would only just feed football in Canada and continue to grow it, especially in the Western portion.
Okay, so the West is in flux, if you will. Now, what about the East? Are we the beast here in the East?
In the OUA, is going to be very interesting this year. And I'm just with the way that conference moves, like right now, the recruiting and all that, it's interesting to see how right now it's the Q with LaValle, and then the OUA is number two, but it's so different, their philosophies and how they're building, because in Quebec they have the ability to pool from the SAGEP program, so they're getting trained athletes, 20-year-olds come in, while in the OUA it's so big on coaching and money's being spent on coaching and getting the best 18-year-olds and building them up and building up their potential. And now we have a team like Carleton coming in that is kind of using the Laval model, where they're getting money, a lot of money from the private sector, and building it up almost privately owned. And they're going to come in with, say, 90 recruits this year. They're starting a new team. And they have Coach Steve Samar as their head coach. They're bringing in all these full-time coaches like JPS Len from Ottawa, who was the head coach there, and he took the offensive coordinator job at Carleton. They're bringing in coaches like that. It's really interesting to see how that one's going to go, because they're going to come in, and you talk to people around the CIS, and usually when a team comes in, you're thinking, maybe 5-7 years. People are like, 3 years, watch this team contending for the Yates Cup and the OUA title. And wouldn't surprise me, because they got a quarterback, Jesse Mills, and he might be a head candidate within 2 years.
Yeah, you know, there are some really talented. I had a chance to talk to Will Finch and his dad, and this kid is phenomenal. Out of high school, goes to Western, starts to learn being a quarterback. Actually, out of high school, he ends up at the Hamilton camp, the CFL Hamilton camp, the Ticats camp. Goes to Western at the beginning of the year, is basically learning his trade, and at the end of the year, towards the end of the year, an injury happens. He takes over and really shows some real talent. And then he comes to the Argo camp this year. This is another amazing wonder kind.
I'm surprised he didn't even go stateside with how great he's done. He was the starting quarterback for Team Canada when they won the World Junior Championships last summer, which was a huge upset against the States. And you see this kid just continue to grow. What was his first? I think his stat line in his first game was like over 200 yards passing,
yeah,
over 100 yards rushing. And what kind of kid does that as an 18-year-old?
Not shy to learn real quick, is he?
And he came through, I think, Neil Lumsden's program with the Burlington Stampede.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That program, that team's just putting out talent. So you have him, you have Jesse Mills, you have Austin Kennedy in Windsor this year. So the OUA has strong quarterbacks. In the queue, they have their normal beats. Montreal and Laval are going to be strong. Just looking online, for the International Football Championship in San Antonio, Team World versus Team USA, there's four prospects on the team who weren't on CIS teams, two of which are Laval commits. So they get the best of the best. They're pulling the best players out of SAGEP consistently. So they're always going to be a tough out, especially with how great they are. They're the undisputed right now until a team knocks them off. Sherbrooke with Jeremy Rock at their quarterback, he has one of the most impressive arms I've seen. He was only in his second year this year, and he was throwing rockets. So, again, Canadian quarterback position building up. Then the furthest point east, you go to the AUS, and it looks like it might be another down year, unfortunately, in the AUS. And the AUS is near and dear to my heart. I lived in Wolfville for 7 years in Nova Scotia, so I've been following AUS football for a long time, and it hurts to see them right now struggle. But it's going to come back up, but unfortunately they're forced to play against the Q this year again in the UTEC Bowl. So I don't foresee an AUS team making it to the Vanier Cup, and I don't think many people out there will argue with my prediction, even though it's a June prediction.
All right. You know what? I've got an interview here that I want you to hear. It's Kyle Quinlan before the draft talking about his career. And then let's talk about how it has ended up after the interview. Okay?
All right.
Kyle Quinlan, the latest in a line of great Canadian quarterbacks that come out of university and are unable to crack the CFL nut as far as being a Canadian quarterback in the Canadian Football League. The winner of the 2011 Vanier Cup has ended his hopes and dreams by taking up coaching back at his home school, McMaster. But before that happened, and before the draft, this is what he'd hoped.
I think my style of play is balanced. I like to move the chains with my feet as well. I try to spread the field vertically and horizontally. You know, the benefit we have in the CFL is it is a large field, so there's a lot of space, and if you have an athletic quarterback, that can kind of take advantage of that.
Again, the bootleg for Quinlan, and what a throw! Can you believe that?
Well, you get to touch the ball every single play. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. And being a field general, that's something that I always took pride in. And just having your stamp on every single play, whether you're handling it off and finishing the fake and trying to block guys with your eyes and stuff like that.
What a block by the quarterback.
Kyle Quinlan just scored a knockout.
I think for me, I take pride in being a student of the game, so I'm going to continue to try to get better every single practice and every single game. And I love film study, so to stay in and watch the film and just really critique myself.
So far, the 47th Vanier Cup here in BC Place has been the Kyle Quinlan show.
It was surreal. It still hasn't fully sunk in. I think seeing that trophy every once in a while, it's starting to sink in a bit. And when we get our rings and are able to look down and see that it actually happened, everything, the whole end of that season just kept going on, and it was a great moment. Well, to continue playing the game I love, you know, I just have so much fun playing this game, and I think Canadians should be proud of the CFL. It's a different style of football than the NFL, and it's exciting, more of a wide-open passing league. So as a quarterback, it'd be a dream to play in that game. Kyle Quinlan, quarterback, McMaster.
Okay, Kevin, what happened? This is 2011. He wins the Vanier Cup in 2011. We're in 2013, and what happened?
I don't know why he wasn't given the opportunity. You have a Canadian quarterback who has hype. If there ever was a CIS quarterback who was a household name, quotation around household name, it would be Kyle Quinlan. Everyone seemed to know who he was. He was on TSN. He was featured in TSN's greatest CIS game ever. He was a mainstay. His year this year was insane. If he wasn't in trouble for what he did in the year that they won the Vanier Cup, he probably would have won the head crane that year. And if people were paying attention to him the year before, he probably should have won it that year too. He probably should have been a three-time head crane winner. But you know what? It seemed like they didn't want to give him an opportunity. Jim Mullen, the reporter out of Vancouver, out of BC, he's the head of the top 10 voting for the CIS top 10. He writes a blog, Jim Mullen Now, .blogspot.ca. He wrote a great article this week, actually, about how serious were the Alouettes about Quinlan. He goes, "We know the answer," and he brought up great points. Quinlan wasn't really communicated with by the Alouettes this offseason. They didn't really talk to him, extend the arm, saying, "Hey, come in, we'll teach you some things, whatnot." They kind of just said, "Oh, we got training camp if you want to come." So he kind of saw the writing on the wall. He didn't get a great opportunity to get many reps last year when he did sign. In training camp, he didn't get any reps in a game. They set him on the field to hand off the ball or take a knee. So he doesn't get any game action. And it's frustrating because how long has it been since there was a great Canadian quarterback? About 40 years. Rush Jackson, I think, was the last one.
And Ron Lancaster, Jackson. Jerry Dottilio was American, right? Jerry Dottilio was American. He played like a Canadian, but he wasn't American. It's been a tough road to hoe for quarterbacks. And, you know, the embarrassment may happen. I think you may have hit the nail on the head a little bit where, you know, a kid like William Finch will go, "You know what? I'm going to learn what I can here. Thank you, CFL, for helping me and having me come to camp. But, you know, I don't think you're going to give me the kind of chance I need." And he may go to the U.S. And then, you know, we as Canadians will have to be embarrassed into realizing maybe there's something we should do to make the league more friendly to Canadian quarterbacks. I'm not trying to. This is not. I don't have anything against American quarterbacks at all. It's just it would be nice if a Canadian quarterback would get the kind of chance that I think they deserve and they don't get. You know, it's just you can't blame the CFL teams. The ratio is the ratio, and the way they apply the ratio is the way they apply it. There would have to be a rule change to – somebody would have to come up with a rule change that's, you know, that isn't a poison pill to the league. You know what I mean?
There has to be a rule change because there's no incentive right now. And many people have written about that or spoken on it. And it seems that there's some general managers in the league who say, yeah, we need this. And think about it. We just had a long conversation about growing the brand of Canadian football. Well, who's the figurehead of every sports or every CFL team or any football team? Who do you know? Who's the household name? The quarterback. So you want to build in? How many Canadians do you think if we took a poll and just called around, how many Canadians think Doug Flutie's Canadian?
A lot of people, probably.
Whenever you say, who's the last Canadian quarterback, most people would say it's Doug Flutie, forgetting that, you know, he might be from Boston and he played at Boston College. But people, he was a Canadian, he played football in Canada, he was a household name. It would build the brand. And, I'm just looking, Liam Mahoney, he was a quarterback for Concordia, switched to receiver because he knew he wasn't going to play quarterback in the CFL. Kyle Graves was nominated for the Het Kraken as a quarterback. He's from Acadia. He's now in Alouette's camp as a punter. So you get things like that. And some people get opportunities. Eric Tillman gave Mark Mueller an opportunity at the Eskimos. He got to go 3-for-3, Ron Lancaster's grandson. So he got an opportunity at least to show his stuff. But other times we don't really get to see this, and quarterback's not getting that chance, and it would be a shame to lose out on great opportunities. Will Finch is a great athlete. We just talked about how he could run and throw. Don't be surprised if he wants to play the CFL, he has to be they move him to receiver.
Absolutely.
That's a shame.
Now, you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around an answer about this. And what comes to mind with me all the time is, okay, what kind of trade-off can we make if they put a quarterback in, let's say, for a quarter, all right, for one quarter, put a Canadian quarterback in for one quarter, one full quarter, and that gives you an extra guy on the ratio table. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they've got to think outside the box. They've got to motivate teams to use Canadian players, because if you're not invited to camp or given a chance to play, really play, because everything you've told me right now says the player never had a chance to play, you know, never had a chance to do anything. And if you're not given a chance to play, how can you be successful?
Well, if you just give them a third-string quarterback, you have to have one Canadian quarterback on your roster. So just by doing that, you have to. All right, well, we don't have that many good Canadian quarterbacks created. Well, now you have an incentive, CFL, to give back to the CIS and grassroots and start building up quarterbacks and start working throughout that and building up quarterbacks in Canada. Because you know what? The best athletes don't want to play quarterback in Canada. Why? Because they want to play in the CFL. If you have aspirations of being a CFLer, say when you're in grade 10, well, if you have aspirations, I bet you some people would rather be wide receiver than quarterback. Because you know what? If you want to have any dream of being a CFL, you want to hone your craft at wide receiver. That's what you have to do. I don't have exact numbers, but there's players who would rather play wide receiver than quarterback because they have dreams of making the CFL. And if you want to be in the CFL, you can't be a Canadian quarterback.
Let me remind you, you're listening to Candid Frank Live, streamed on Rouge Radio. We have a responsibility to stop disappointing young players who basically are, you know, Canadian quarterbacks have to play football. I mean, you can't have a team without a Canadian quarterback in Canadian football. And it's kind of crazy when you think about it. If you actually think about it, can you imagine if the National Hockey League had no Canadian goalies? I mean, there is a bit of a there is a bit of a problem with Canadian goalies right now, because most of them are European. But can you imagine if there were no Canadian goalies, and because there were no Canadian goalies, they weren't going to give one a chance to prove that he could play goal?
Oh yeah, they're having that issue right now. They created that ratio right now in the CHL where you're not allowed to draft. If you want to draft a European goalie, I guess you have to draft him in the first round of the import draft.
Right,
is the new rule. So imagine that where you're restricting a player. You rarely see Canadian quarterbacks go. Brett Sinopoli was one of the best Canadian quarterbacks in a long time. And he was a third stringer for the Stampeders. He was the holder, and he was a great quarterback. And it's a shame that we don't get to see these people get opportunities. But it needs to be changed. You can't fault the teams, or you can't fault management to a certain extent, because they're playing with the hand they're dealt. You don't want to do anything to hurt your team's opportunity of winning. But in another thing, the management's not really putting up that much of a fight to say, hey, let's go with Canadian quarterback, or let's change the ratio so that we can get Canadian quarterbacks. So it's a two-way street. You can kind of – we understand why they do it, but I don't understand why they don't change it.
I have no idea. We've run out of time. Kevin, may I please apologize to you for the problems we had technically in connecting with you earlier, and next time I promise we'll do a better job of hooking up with you.
Oh, no worries. Thanks again for having me on. I'm sure we'll be talking a few times this summer and going into the fall.
Absolutely. Hopefully on a regular basis. Kevin, thank you for your insights. We'll stay in touch, and we'll work out the next time you're on, even on a weekly basis. It's all good. Jason Sperling is the producer of Rouge Radio, and thank you, Jason, for helping me put together today's show. Kevin Garbullo, and of course Matthew Schinati. I'm Italian. I should be able to say his name. I don't understand that. Thanks again. All right, now. We've all had a wonderful night. I know I have. I'm really appreciative of the new guys coming in to help fill the airtime. Now I have about 20 interviews that I still can play. There's always Monday. If not Wednesday, there's always Monday. So here we're on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And Monday is soon to be the review day. We'll review the action that took place prior to Monday in the CFL. And on Wednesday will be a preview day where we'll talk about the upcoming games. On Friday, for those of you that aren't a football 3 days a week kind of guys and gals, we do a show. I do a show with Aaron Freeland. We have what we like to call Freaky Fridays. No, just, you know. And we... Recently, last week, we talked to some actors and stunt women, and this week I'm trying to hook up with someone that's going to be really interesting, a real baseball mind, and also, you'll have to tune in on Friday to find out. Listen, everybody, thank you for tuning in, and let's go out with a couple of, you know what? I don't know if they'll let me do it, but I'm going to see how far we can go over. Okay, and here's my intention. I played a tease, the CFL, the ESPN coverage of course, the Argos winning the Grey Cup. Now, I'll see if I can find it. We'll play it maybe going out. It'll last a little while. So, I think you'll enjoy it. It's 8 minutes. Let's see if they let me go 8 minutes over. It'll be about 10 by the time it's done. Let's give it a shot. What do you think? Good night, everyone. This is how we're going out.
Modest roots in 1909, it's become the biggest annual event on the Canadian sports calendar. And we are ready for a game 100 years in the making. It's been played in mud, fog, snow, and ice by legends and underdogs with staples and a 13th man. It's been captured by the Sarnia Imperials and an Edmonton dynasty, and even once taken across the border. TSN, proud to present the 100th Grey Cup. Stamps and Argos are set, their third ever meeting. It was Calgary in 71, Toronto in 91. Who wins number 100? Rene Paredes kicks it off. We're underway. And here's the outstanding player in the Canadian Football League in 2012. Chad Owens drilled. And Marquay McDaniel kicks back in. Second and six, a fumble. And Glenn gets back on it. Or does he? It's Argo football. Very much like a play last week in the Eastern Final that the Argos lost. Here, Ricky Foley comes up with a football. Quick, Ricky Ray, 11 for 14 on second down. Second and 10, a pump. Time. And now he'll dump it off the catcher. Flag down, and Deion Raymond.
Face mask, Calgary number 96. 15 yards from the end of the play. First down.
First down, Argos, Calgary, 17-yard line. Back inside, Cacker the hole, and Chad Cacker bulldozing inside the five. Another Argo first down.
Got his hands up in the grill.
Andrew Jones in a tight end, and they'll swing it to the near side. Chad Owens, the man to beat. He does! Touchdown! The most outstanding player, 2012, strikes first in the 100th Grey Cup game. Stan Peters with only one first down of the game, second and 10. Glenn pulling, and that one is intercepted. Pacino Horn inside the five, touchdown.
First question is whether or not Pacino Horn got his arms underneath that football. It looks like from that first replay that he certainly did. That's an interception and a touchdown.
An influence outbreak canceled 1919's game. Pass over the middle and Nick Willis. Wide open. Still going. Away he goes. Jordan Younger trying to tackle him and collars him at the 25. Willis lost the helmet, but he has just kick-started the Calgary offense. 61 yards. Junior IU, some great names on that board. Fly sweep. Robbie Bryant tackled back at the 10. Big defensive play to Jiro Kowale is having the game of the season for him. So Rene Paredes comes in. Full Levi Mitchell with the pin. And the Stampeders settled for three. In for Dury. First down, 48-yard line. Dury set up as a back, and they'll pinch it. Cacker. And the old bulldog is way down to the 44. The number on his back for Chad Cackert is the Argo line of scrimmage after an 18-yard run. Checks back in from Ace. First down, Ray lost the tie. He wants Inman. He got it. What a catch. Dontrell Inman at the one. Out battling Brandon Smith.
If you give Ricky Ray this much time, the pocket. He is arguably the best deep ball thrower in CFL history, and there have been some great passers in this game.
Jarius Jackson is in now. Takes the catcher, swings it to Inman, walking, touchdown. Had to wait two plays, but Inman's got his touchdown. And the Argos expand the lead.
Little play action to Chad Cacker. Gets it out there to Dontrell Inman, and he walks in. In the color.
Here's Cornish in space, and John Cornish across midfield. Lost his footing, taken down by Horn at the Argo 49-yard line. Went back in, second and eight. Off the edge, pressure over the middle. Nick Lewis hangs on at the 20, and it will be decision time now. This occasion, Grey Cup 100, one of the dominant players in the history of this great game. As Rene Paredes puts it through. The NBC Sports Network fans watching Chad Cacker shoot up down to the 26-yard line. Eric Fraser, the safety, with the tackle, but it's been a big night for Chad Cacker. Second and punch, and they'll screen it to Cacker. Gets a block, gets outside, and he'll be pushed out just short of the first down. From 20 yards out, Harris had trouble, but got it down. Well, the rookie quarterback just got the pin in for Swayze Waters to add to the lead. Three receivers to that far side. They're looking their way deep, but Maurice Price draws the flag. Step for step was Ahmad Carroll, but flags fly, and it's a big gain for Calgary by a penalty. Glenn underneath. Catch made, but
Daniel stumbling, and it's short yardage. And now do you leave the offense out, or do you take three with still over 10 minutes to go? Well, you see the remarkable consistency of Rene Paredes, 26 consecutive field goal. They turn out to be the best $5,000 they spend this year. Here's Owens. Trying, and it'll be a 15-yard goal, yards and maybe more as Darius Brooks tosses him out, and Calgary losing its composure.
Unnecessary roughness, horse collar, Calgary, number 32. It's another 15-yard penalty.
Wow.
About 30 yards.
For Calgary on the night. Calgary's going to try and pat it down. He gets outside. Down to the 15 and puts down to Malcolm at the 11-yard line. Chad Kacker over 100 yards rushing.
Some of the great football players in this game's history.
Second down, they swing it out. There's Andre Drury and the Toronto guys into the end zone. Touchdown. A breakup hero now. Andre Drury with a back-breaking touchdown. That's Nick Volpe, who played for the Argos in the Mud Bowl, been with them for most of the last 60 years. Evan McCullough, a tackle
right
to get you where you are. Second and 10. Underneath, it's Matt Walter, the former Calgary Dino. Underneath, Mopremis, and he'll dive into the end zone. Touchdown. First catch of the game for Maurice Price, a guy many thought could be a difference maker today. Well, two kickers out there. Paredes goes to the far side. Jump ball. And there's Bradwell to come down with it for the Argos. That will cue the Gatorade. The Toronto Argonauts have won the historic 100th.
Et mes fiers plaisir de présenter. It is my pleasure to present the 100th Grey Cup to your hometown, Toronto.